Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome. Welcome, everyone, on this beautiful, beautiful full day. Strategy in business is what we're talking about today in our first segment. It's one of the most sought-after skills, whether you're an employer, employee, or self-employed. Yet it's a skill that few people really master. So I wanted to sit down and chat with someone who's known as a great strategist. He's built his whole career around teaching it, and more importantly, around practicing it, around implementing it, and around reaping the benefits of good strategy. He's Rich Haworth of strategyskills.com, and I sat down with him a couple of weeks ago to get some insight on his work and how we might apply that to our lives, whether we're an employee, business owner, or employer. We're going to play that conversation to you right now. And are we ready? Here we go. Failure to develop good strategy can sink your business and career. A recent Wall Street Journal study showed that the most sought-after executive skill is strategic thinking, but only 3 out of 10 managers have this skill set. And the Harvard Business Review cites that only 1 in 10 managers spend their time in a committed, purposeful, and reflective manner. In this segment, we're talking about proven methods for building effective strategy, whether we're heading up the career track, building our own business, or job hunting. And I'm very pleased to have with me Rich Haworth. He's the president of the Strategic Thinking Business Institute. He's a former chief strategy officer and professor of strategy at the Lake Forest Graduate School of Management. As a thought-leading strategist, he's worked with such giants as Adidas, Amgen, and Pfizer. He's the author of 4 books and more than 50 articles on strategic thinking. He's been profiled in business publications around the world, including Investor's Business Daily. Rich Haworth, welcome to the show.
Vicki, great to be with you today. Thanks.
I should have said also, your book is called, you have a new book out, it's called Deep Dive, The Proven Method for Building Strategy, Focusing Your Resources, and Taking Smart Action. So why a book on strategy, Rich? Let's start there about why you felt it was necessary to write this book on strategy.
Well, Vicki, as you know, in today's economy, we're facing recession and a lot of organizations are going bankrupt. And the reality is that when you look at the data, about 50% of bankruptcies are caused by bad strategy. So I think today, more than ever, organizations and the people that are leading them, whether they're at the senior levels or the mid-levels, really need to have a clear, consistent strategy and be able to set that direction for their organizations if they want to exist 2, 3, 4 years down the road, and if we want to have jobs 2, 3, or 4 years down the road. So strategy in the past has been a nice to have, but I think today in this environment, it's really become a need to have. And so that's really the main reason for writing the book at this time.
And looking at the numbers that I gave at the beginning of the introduction there, only 3 out of 10 managers have this skill set. Only 1 in 10 managers spend their time in a committed, purposeful, and reflective manner. If we can learn to strategize effectively, we're going to be way ahead of the game, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, Vicki, I think the thing is, most people have the strategic capabilities within them. They've just never been exposed to some of the concepts and tools to develop strategy. You know, I think all of us are swimming in more information than we know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through the internet, through the blogs and the Twitters, we've got lots of information coming at us. But if you're a manager, the really strategic ones are able to sift through all of the information and data that are coming at them and be able to pick out the 2 or 3 pieces that are really important for them and their jobs and able to put those together to create a new idea or a new way of thinking that's going to drive their business forward. So again, to your point, strategic thinking at an individual manager level is critical today, and it's really just about people getting exposure to the key concepts and tools to help them think strategically day in and day out.
Right. And I definitely want to go through some of those types that you talk about in the book. You have a lot of really great information in here. But I want to, first of all, Rich, define the difference between strategic thinking and tactical thinking, because I, like many other people, have probably sat in meetings, for strategic planning meetings or meetings where we're going to talk about applying the strategy, and they end up being little more than tactical meetings.
That's a great point, Vicki. I was just in Europe last week running a program for senior-level executives, and one of the comments that came up was, we're not sure sometimes in our organizations the difference between strategies and goals and objectives and mission statements. And I think both in Europe and the United States, there's a lot of confusion as to the basic planning terms. And when you come to the term strategy and tactics, I think most of us feel comfortable with tactics because tactics are tangible. You know, we can reach out, we can touch them. So things like CD-ROMs or cell sheets, things that you can physically grab are the tactics. What's not as apparent is the strategy. And because strategy is abstract, you can't reach out and touch it, I think a lot of people have shied away from trying to really get into strategy and use it to drive their business success because we're never comfortable with things that we really can't see. And so what I do in the book Deep Dive is I try and provide people with a very simple framework to help them go from being tactical, meaning working on things that they can just see day in and day out, to really the strategy, which is that big picture that should be driving all of your actions on a daily basis.
That big picture that's going to take us to the next level instead of keeping us just, you know, moving one step at a time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's look at another definition, Rich, that I think is important, and you address this in the book, the difference between strategic thinking and strategic planning.
What I like to say, Vicki, is that most organizations have basically an organizational lobotomy. And what I mean by that is that they really don't do any thinking. In a lot of organizations, we go from one strategic plan to the next strategic plan, and all we change is the date. And the strategic plan sits on a shelf collecting dust in a binder, and we pull it out once a year. And I think most of us, when we look in the mirror, we realize that's just not very effective. And so really we need to move from strategic planning as that annual pilgrimage to the strategy gods, and we need to get to where strategy is a daily event. And the way we can do that is through conversation and dialogue. Great strategy comes from dialogue for people within the organization. So people in marketing talking to people in sales, talking to people in operations and customer service, not just once a year, but on a regular basis. That's how we generate insights, and insights are really the key to strategic thinking. So we need to move from that annual pilgrimage to really a conversation and a dynamic dialogue on strategy on a regular basis.
So let's look at the four types of strategic thinkers. The first one is beach bum. Is a beach bum really a strategic thinker?
That's a great point, Vicki. Actually, they're really not, to your point. The beach bum is the manager that kind of sits on the side. They're very tactical or operational in nature, and they're really not able to contribute any deep strategic thinking or insights or solutions to the business. And what the research shows is probably about 10% of managers really fall into that level. And again, it's usually not because they want to be there. It's just because they haven't been given the opportunities or the training to elevate their thinking where they can really contribute in a more productive way.
Right. Now, I should say your book is called Deep Dive, as we mentioned, and you have a lot of diving analogies in there, because you had a little incident yourself when you were scuba diving once that was not so strategic, right?
Yes, I don't like to admit it, Vicki, but I'll admit it to you. I was scuba diving in Cozumel, Mexico, and actually ran out of air. And as anybody who's been scuba diving before can tell you, running out of air, to your point, is not very strategic. But, you know, it did hit home with me, and that's one of the reasons I use the analogy, is that we really need to be precise on how we allocate and use our resources. And obviously, when you're scuba diving, oxygen is your most valuable resource, and when you run out of that resource, you know, you really understand the importance of it. And I think in business, we often use our resources in a lackadaisical manner, and we don't really scrutinize where we're putting our time, our talent, and our budget.
Right.
We don't see it as oxygen. We just take it for granted. And when we take it for granted, sooner or later, because we've used or misused our resources, we no longer have enough resources to survive, and not only survive, but thrive. So, yeah, the reason I use that analogy is because I want people to really think about the resources they have as a manager like their oxygen.
Right. Well, let's look at the other three types of strategic thinkers, because we the next one is snorkeler, and then you've got scuba diver and free diver. Tell us a little bit about each one and how you define them.
The snorkeler is the manager who really skims the surface of issues. And in many organizations, when you sit in meetings, a lot of times these will be the first people to speak. They'll talk a little bit about the issue. But at the end of the meeting, when we're really talking about resolving the issues, resolving the problems, resolving the challenges, they really don't have a lot of new things to offer up. And so, again, I think these are the managers that really are in the position to get better, to contribute strategically by becoming more aware of what some of the key planning terms and tools are.
Mm-hmm.
The next group is the scuba diver. So if we go a little bit deeper, obviously a scuba diver is well equipped with the oxygen tank and the regulator and the mask and the fins. And these are like the managers that when you put them in the right setting, a meeting that has good instruction, you've got the tools there, they can come up with some productive insights and solutions. But when you take them out of that setting, the insights they come up with are a lot fewer and a lot less frequent. And so the final level, the deepest level, is the free diver. And as you know, a free diver is someone who uses no oxygen or no breathing apparatus, and they can yet dive to depths of hundreds of feet on a single breath. And these are the managers who are able to come up with deep strategic insights on a frequent basis that really changes the direction, the course of the business in a positive way. And so the tools in the book Deep Dive and the concepts are really designed to get managers at all levels to be able to contribute insights on a more regular and positive basis.
Yeah, makes sense. I want to talk about the three disciplines of strategic thinking, acumen, allocation, and action. And first of all, let's look at why you chose to call these disciplines.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think today, more than ever, you know, we see a lot of organizations that are struggling to survive. And I think the reality is, in some cases, we haven't been as disciplined as we need to. You know, when times are good, we tend to be a little bit more lax and not focus and not really, really understand what we're doing. And when times are tougher, all of a sudden, we're looking around to say, what's our plan? And the idea of the three disciplines is so that in any type of economic environment, whether it's good or whether it's difficult, if we have these three disciplines that you outlined, then we're going to give ourselves the best chance to be successful from both a financial perspective and then also a qualitative perspective, meaning me as the individual manager, I'm going to be increasing my value to the organization so that my skill sets are growing and I'm contributing to the best of my ability.
Hmm. Let's look at the first one, acumen. And if you can give me examples of how we would build strategy around this or build this into strategy, that would be really helpful, I think.
Yeah, you know, insights and acumen is the first discipline. And really, the way I look at acumen is if you think of a Ferrari or a race car, you've got the steering wheel, which is your strategy. Insights are the key that turns the ignition on and gets the engine started. If you don't have the insights or the key, the Ferrari, even though it's a high-performance car, is going to go nowhere.
Mm.
And so we need to think about insights as our key to the ignition. And an insight is really that so what or that aha for your business. We need to be able to challenge our assumptions and come up with insights. And in the book, I talk about some ways to generate insights. You know, but a good example would be You know, Apple, we're all familiar with Apple and Steve Jobs, the CEO there. You know, the insight he had years ago was not to invest resources in developing a PDA, like a Palm Pilot, but he said, you know, the insight I have is most people use those products on the road, they take information out of them, and he saw, even before they were popular, smartphones being able to replace the PDA. And so he held his resources back, and that insight led him to develop not only the iPod, but the iPhone after that. So by holding back his resources, that insight allowed him to take Apple to heights that it's never seen before.
Right, right. And the second one is allocation. You talked a little bit about the importance of our resources, and they fall into three categories: tangible, intangible, and human.
Right. And, you know, I think the bottom line is when it comes to allocation, strategy and our success in business, both from an individual manager perspective and an organization, is really as much about what we choose not to do as it is about what we choose to do. If you look at the organizations that have been successful, they've really made significant trade-offs when it comes to what they offer and who they offer it to. Southwest Airlines is a good example. They've been profitable for 30 years in the airline industry, which is a very difficult industry, because they've been able to make trade-offs and say no.
Right.
They haven't offered food. They haven't offered fancy lounges. They've only used one type of aircraft. So they've made a lot of trade-offs, and they certainly don't appeal to everyone, but they appeal to the people they want to appeal to. So allocation is really about thinking, what should we not be doing? You know, if you have trees on your property, you understand that you have to prune the branches to promote new growth. And we need to think of our businesses in the same way. We're all good about adding more projects, more initiatives, more tactics to our plate each year. But what we don't do is pull things off. We don't prune our business. And the really good managers, the really good leaders are able to prune their business and take things off, so they can focus on the most important thing.
Good point. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll look at the third discipline of strategic thinking, which is action. My guest is Rich Haworth. His book is called Deep Dive, The Proven Method for Building Strategy, Focusing Your Resources, and Taking Smart Action. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Remember, you're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Rich Haworth. His book is called Deep Dive. And we're talking about strategy today. We're talking about how it applies to your business. And in just a second, we'll get to how it applies to getting that new promotion that you long for or when you're job hunting. Rich, welcome back. And I wanted to continue. We were talking about the three disciplines of strategic thinking. We've looked at acumen, allocation. Let's look at action. What do we need to know about strategic thinking and action?
Well, Vicky, as you know, and as we all know, we're bombarded with emails, with voicemails, day in and day out. It seems like we just have these tidal waves coming at us, and sometimes it's hard to keep our head above water. And so what we tend to do is we tend to focus on those urgent things that keep piling up, and what happens is we lose sight of some of the important things that are really going to drive the business. Research out of Harvard Business School has shown that when it comes to strategy, 85% of senior management teams spend less than 1 hour per month discussing strategy, and 50% don't spend any time at all. So we need to be able to shift our time to strategic issues. As an example, at Amazon.com, Jeff Bezos, the CEO, has their senior management team spend roughly 4 hours a week discussing strategic issues. So not operational issues, not budget issues, but strategic issues. And he expects that to happen throughout the organization.
So the
discipline of action is really about saying, how can we focus on what's important to our organization and not just the urgent things that are popping up?
Yeah, I think the best boss I ever had was very big on strategic thinking. And he did not care if you didn't have anything on your desk and you were staring at the wall as long as you were thinking about the business. He'd much rather you do that than run around looking busy.
Well, Vicki, that's great. And I'll tell you what, you're very fortunate to have worked for
him or her. Yeah, I realized he was a good guy. Difficult, but good.
Yeah, I think in our society, you know, we've replaced the Wall Street movie creed with greed is good to speed is good.
Right.
And I think a lot of times we need to slow down and take time to think about, are we really doing the right things as opposed to just doing things?
Yeah. What are the biggest, the three biggest mistakes that people tend to make when they're implementing strategy?
Yeah, when it comes to implementing strategy, you know, there's the three things I'd say that I see the most often are, number one, they don't connect the strategy with what they're doing day to day. In a lot of places, the strategy sits in this binder on a shelf, and it's not being used to drive what people are doing day in and day out. If you've developed a strategy and it's not tied to people's daily activities, then you may as well not have a strategy at all. So the first thing is not being able to tie strategy to what people are doing day in and day out. The second one is really mistaking your goals for strategy. You know, it's often we see that we see CEOs talk about their goal or their strategies as being the market leader or trying to be number one. And that's really what you're trying to achieve, which is your goal. Strategy is how you're going to achieve it. And so a lot of the confusion when it comes to implementing strategy is you're starting with something that's actually a goal instead of a strategy. And then the third one really would be not being able to be responsive to what's going on from a change perspective in your business. You know, a lot of times we wait for a year to look at our strategy, when if there's a big change in the market or customers or competition, we need to be able to respond to that change almost immediately. So being able to meet with your team on a monthly basis for an hour or two and talk about the key facets of your business is crucial to not getting blindsided in business today.
Mm. You talked a little bit earlier about Steve Jobs and the iPhone and how he held back resources and said no on certain things. You talk about the power of no and say it's one of the most important things you can learn to do. Let's talk about that from the perspective you're talking about.
Yeah, the power of no is really about the success that we have being based on what we choose not to do. And, you know, I'd almost like to bring it to an individual manager level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of us out there right now, we may be looking for work. We might be in an organization where we're not at the level we want to be at. And what I would challenge us all with is looking at how we're investing our resources. How are we investing our time each day, our skill sets, and any budgets that we have? You know, if we're not focused on a few things that really help separate us from other people, then when we go to interview for a job or we go to interview for that next promotion, we're likely to get passed by. You know, we need to find out what are the few things that we do really, really well that can help separate us from our colleagues and from other people looking for jobs. And so we've got to ask, what's the differentiated value that I can bring to the organization, either the one I'm at or the one I'm interviewing with? And when we identify that differentiated value, we have to clearly communicate that to our bosses or to the people that we're interviewing with.
Right. And that's a good segue into difference, because you talk in the book deeply about it's important to be different. It's more important to be different than better. And you give some great examples in there. I think Enterprise Car Rentals was one. You compare the successes of Johnny Cash and the Mini Cooper. Talk to us a little bit about how we differentiate ourselves and why it's more important than being better than.
You know, one of the things I think that comes back to haunt us is this idea of better. You know, we've got to be better. And I think when we're little kids, you know, we think we've got to be better, we've got to be faster. And the reality is, I think as we get older and hopefully wiser, we realize that better is completely subjective. You know, everybody's going to have a different opinion on what's better, but differentiation is something that we can look at more objectively. And, you know, one example I'd give you is, you know, blueberry pie versus banana cream. You know, Vicki, you might say, well, Rich, I love banana cream. I think it's better. And I might say, well, Vicki, I love blueberry pie. I think it's better. We're going to have a hard time convincing each other which is better. But you might be able to say, you know, Rich, blueberry pie is different because it contains blueberries, which have antioxidants, which are good for you and may help you live longer. And if you said that, I'd say, well, you know what, Vicki's got a point there. So we need to think about, you know, not just being better, but being different from our competition in ways that our core customers value. You know, differentiation is really what separates people from the pack. It's not about being a little bit better or faster. It's about being slightly different in ways that people value.
Mm. In a lot of organizations, when we're looking for work, for example, or maybe we have a business and we're looking to do business with another business, people often put so much emphasis on past experience. You don't agree that that's one of the best attributes. Why not? And what do we need to know about that so that we can do a better job of presenting ourselves?
Experience, to your point, Vicki, experience is often used as the number one indicator of a job candidate's success. And what the data shows is that when you're hiring people, experience is really only the fifth best indicator of success. And so if we have experience alone, that's not going to equal expertise. You know, the example I'd give you is the U.S. Post Office has been around since 1789, which means it's got 220 years of experience delivering things. You look at FedEx, which has only been around for about 38 years, and FedEx has on-time delivery rates of roughly 99.8%. So I think in a very short time, FedEx has used their limited experience. They've mined it for insights on ways to become different and more valuable, and they've become much more successful. So I think, again, we need to not take our experience for granted, but use that experience to ask ourselves, what are we learning about our business that can make us better? You know, Vicki, think how powerful it would be for a manager to go into their next performance review with a journal or a notebook filled with the learnings or insights they had from the past year, as opposed to just kind of rehashing what they did. It'd be a much more powerful experience. So again, if we can think about what are the insights, what are the learnings from our business, as opposed to just our experience, I think job candidates and people looking to move up in an organization will really separate themselves from the pack.
Yeah, I'm actually reading Richard Branson's book right now. I think it's called Business Stripped Bare.
Right.
Very insightful book because he's well known for carrying journals everywhere with him. But some of the things he wrote down were just very simple things like carpet dirty, didn't like the crackers on the airplane. I mean, very simple things, but these were all learning things for him to take back and make sure that he corrected or somebody corrected immediately.
And that's a great example of being able to pull together insights or learnings, even if they're small ones like the carpet is dirty, and you start piecing those together with other things in the journal, and then soon you say to yourself, you know what? We need to do a better overall job of quality or cleanliness on our planes or in our stores.
Right.
And so, you know, being able to identify even those small learnings, I think, will give managers, you know, even if they're not at Richard Branson's level, those types of things are able to help managers grow in their learning of the business and again, stand out from the other people because they've got a hard, fast copy of what they've learned. And I think Richard Branson is a great example that you bring up, Vicki, because that's really what's helped propel him to be so successful.
Yeah, most definitely. I want to ask you, Rich, whether I'm job hunting, whether I have a small business, or whether I'm a manager in a corporation, and I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, gee, yeah, I'm coming from a totally tactical point of view, or I'm not being as strategic as I could be. Where do I want to start to develop strategy? A huge question, I know, but give us a nutshell there of where we would start developing strategy.
It's a great question. I think really the place that you start is with that three A's. And if you look at acumen, I think you can say to yourself, what is the insight that is driving the project or the work I'm doing today? And if we take a hard look and we can find out what is the insight that's driving our work today, now that gives us some understanding of the bigger picture. Because if we just do the job without trying to understand where it fits in the whole perspective of the business, then we're really not helping ourselves to be more strategic. So, Vicki, to your point, the first step is to understand how your work, how your project fits into the bigger scope of the business. And you can do that by asking people that you work with. You can do that by talking with your boss and really saying, you know, what do you see as the key insights that are driving this project? Because I want to make sure we're really maximizing its potential. And then once you understand that insight, then it's a matter of tracking where you're putting your time and your skills and your budget. Are you putting them on the factors that are going to drive this project to be successful, or are you just spreading them thinly across the business, kind of like a farmer spreads fertilizer evenly across all his crops? You know, we can't afford to spread our resources evenly. We've got to focus. So the second step is just picking out what are the places that are going to give me the greatest return on this project. And then the third piece is just understanding what are the actions that I need to take to stay focused on what's important. What are the things at the end of the year? And I would recommend, Vicki, that people write those down, because if you don't write them down, you're not going to have that lighthouse or that barometer that tells you when you're getting off track. Mm. So I think if they take those three steps, that will help them to start moving from tactical to being more strategic.
Yeah, and I can attest to that personally, Rich, because I usually take myself off on a 2 or 3 day retreat every year. I didn't get to do it last year because I was, quote, too busy, big mistake, and found myself, running through the mill for the next few months until I realized what I was doing and took those 3 days to strategize.
Vicki, you've got great insight. If you look at Bill Gates from Microsoft, that's what he used to do every year as well. He would take a week-long retreat and give himself time to think. So I think, you know, by doing that, you have a lot of foresight in that it gives you time to recharge, but it also helps you get out of the day-to-day where we feel so rushed and helps you understand really what is important to me and what's going to help me be successful.
Right.
So kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah, and that applies across the board, not just to work, but to personal life too. I mean, it's all, you know, if we don't think about it and try and make it happen, we just get what comes to us.
Exactly.
You said in the book, a picture is worth $1,000 in business. What does that mean?
If you've sat in a meeting like I've sat in a meeting and you've talked for hours and hours, and you've walked out of the meeting with nothing tangible, meaning no pictures, no charts, usually the day or two after that, you think back and said, boy, I think we really wasted some time because nothing's changed since we left that meeting. And so what I try to do is help people capture the key business issues with models, which are basically pictures of your business. Because I think if you draw a picture of your business, and you do it using one of the 40 different models that you can use, now all of a sudden, if we have that on the flip chart or the whiteboard in front of the room, we can have a very creative, dynamic dialogue with one another about the key issues. And we take it from he said, she said, to what's up on the board. And so the dialogue becomes a lot more engaging and a lot richer, because now we're walking out of the meeting with pictures of the key business issues that we can go back to a day or two later and say, okay, based on these key issues, What are we going to do next? And so that's why I think pictures, as opposed to just talking about issues in meetings, really make a huge difference when it comes to what are we going to do differently tomorrow to help our business.
Right. Before we go today, I'd like to just ask you why you think Starbucks, a local homegrown company here, which of course is ubiquitous across the country now, but or across the world actually, but why do you think Starbucks has been so successful? And even in this downtrend, it seems to be, yes, they've closed stores, but it seems to be holding its own somewhat.
I think Starbucks has been so successful because Howard Schultz and the team there has really created a different value proposition than the other folks that they've competed with. And they've really been at the forefront of that value proposition. And it's really been about creating a different environment in which to enjoy and experience coffee, their other products, but really to give people that third place that they can meet, that they can talk, that they can dialogue. So I think, you know, Howard has been able to differentiate Starbucks in a positive way from the Dunkin' Donuts and the other places. And even today now, you've got companies like McDonald's coming out with higher-end coffees. Starbucks still has a different experience than a McDonald's, than a Dunkin' Donuts. And again, it may not be for everyone, but they've certainly built that experience that if you appreciate having some time to yourself or meeting with a colleague off-site, it gives you that opportunity and it creates a feeling that you're in a different place. And I think that's really been the driver of their success in the past. And I think hopefully if they stay true to that vision, even in this economic downturn, I think they'll still continue to be very successful.
Well, I thank you for being with us today and sharing your insights into strategy. Certainly made me think about certain things that I might be doing that are less than strategic. But what would you like to leave our listeners with today, Rich?
You know, the thing I'd like to leave folks with, Vicki, is, you know, your destiny is not just at a whim. You know, your destiny is built on becoming the best that you can be. And from a strategy and a leadership perspective, all the research and surveys show that strategy is the most important competency for a leader. So please take time and find the tools, find the concepts, find the frameworks that help you, that can help you be a better strategic leader, because both your professional and your personal success depends on that. So that's what I'd offer up.
Well, I appreciate it. And your website is strategyskills.com, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, strategyskills.com. My guest again, Rich Haworth. His book is called Deep Dive, The Proven Method for Building Strategy, Focusing Your Resources, and Taking Smart Action. Applies if you have your own business, looking for a job, or looking for that next promotion. Rich Haworth, thanks so much for being with us.
Vicki, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
And again, that segment was pre-recorded because of scheduling conflicts, but I wanted to bring it to you because I really do believe Rich Haworth is one of the best strategy speakers around. He knows how to talk about it and how to implement it and reap the benefits. I've actually listened to that segment several times myself, and it will be up on conversationslive.net tonight as a podcast if you want to listen to it again. Stay with us. Coming up next, we have Emily Arm from the Grand Cinema down in Tacoma. We have the Tacoma Film Festival coming up, and Emily's joining us to tell us all about it, what's happening, where, and when. Stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws Foster Care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Join us for a creative hour next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. At the age of 68, first-time novelist Selden Edwards has fulfilled a 30-year dream, and his book is receiving rave reviews. We'll also talk with two documentary filmmakers whose very different films premiere in October at the Tacoma Film Festival. Tune in next Monday at noon Pacific on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Call Vicki at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617 for more information.
Click the shows page on 1150kknw.com for the scoop on Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm joined in this segment by Emily Alm from the Grand Cinema down in Tacoma. We have a Tacoma Film Festival coming up soon. I realized when I was looking up information, next week we've got two filmmakers joining us. And so I was looking at what kind of film festivals were around, and there are a lot of them. But Emily was kind enough to join us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and I wanted to, let's talk a little bit about the film festival, how it got started, first of all. How long has it been around down in Tacoma?
This is going to be the fourth year we've had it. It's been growing so much every year, and it's put on by the Grand Cinema, just kind of our idea 4 years ago to showcase independent filmmakers, emerging local films that wouldn't get a spot to play in otherwise.
Do you know what shocked me when I was looking? Because I know quite a few filmmakers. I did not realize how many had a Northwest connection.
So many, yeah. We kind of strive to show as many of those as we can. Mm. And there's probably a third of them are local, have local ties, have lived here before, something like that. So it's great for us.
So when is the festival? When does the festival start?
Kicks off October 1st and ends on October 8th. So a full week of films, special events, and fun.
Yeah. And do you have a kickoff party, a celebration party?
We do. We have a opening night gala and special opening night film presentation. October 1st, it's going to be at 6:30 at Annie Wright Kemper Theater in Tacoma, and we'll have a gala with catered food and then presentation of two films at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Just to kick off the whole week.
And anyone can go to that opening gala?
Anyone can go, yep. Grand Cinema members get special ticket price, but tickets are available for anybody.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking next week with two filmmakers. One of them is actually premiering at the Tacoma Film Festival. She's made films before, but this is her first premiere at the Tacoma Film Festival, Sue Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk, she's a documentary filmmaker, but let's talk a little bit about the kind of films that you have there, mm-hmm. because they're not all documentary, right?
No, they're not. We have everything from art films to sci-fi, to animated, drama, comedy, documentary, pretty much anything we would take a look at, and we want to play it if it's good.
Okay. And you have a, I also read that you have a post-movie celebration on Friday night.
Yes, on Friday the 2nd?
October 2nd.
Yeah, there's the Adriatic Girl down in Tacoma is hosting a party for filmmakers, filmgoers, just to kind of celebrate and mingle with everybody. So that'll be a fun event, too.
Very good. Now, how do you go about selecting the filmmakers who appear at the Tacoma Film Festival?
That's a good question. Well, this year it was a lot tougher. We had nearly double the submissions as we did last year.
Give us an idea of how many you get.
We had at least 320 to consider this year.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a huge jump from last year to begin with. So we had our work cut out for us from the beginning.
Right.
But we had at least two people watch each film, and we have a group of people from the film community in Tacoma that help us judge these submissions. So at least two people watch them. giving it a yay or nay vote. And if there was a tie, we had a third person come in and try and split that tie.
Yeah, I should imagine it's awfully hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
The competition is steep, isn't it?
It is. And the films are so different. It's hard to say, you know, relatively which one is better than the other. You know, that's a tough call.
Right. I also saw that you have a filmmaker workshop on this Saturday with Warren Etheridge.
Yes.
And for those who don't know, he's the head of development, president and head of development for Lux Spring Pictures. And he, for 6 years, I read, served as the curator of the Bumbershoot Film Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he has his own publication, The Warren Report, just about film. He's a huge mogul in Seattle, Northwest film community, and we're very excited to have him as a part of our festival this year. The workshop should be awesome. It's free to anybody.
Wow. Wow, is it free?
It's free. It's free to anybody.
Well, I might go to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's for filmmaking.
Right.
But
right.
I'm sure it'll be interesting, not just for filmmakers.
Yeah. I think I read a little bit about it's how to get your movie actually out onto the street, about distribution.
Right.
And that's a key thing because, you know, I've worked on several documentary films, and that's the easy part. The hard part is distributing them and getting them out on the street.
How do you get people to see it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he has a great insight to that, and I think it'll be very interesting.
Now, is that an all-day workshop, a half-day?
I think it's just through the morning. I'm not quite sure how long he usually goes, but in the morning time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the cinema itself, the Grand Cinema. Been around a long time, right?
Yeah. We became a nonprofit in 97. So it's been 12 years now, and we're the only independent nonprofit theater pretty much in the South Sound region. We show independent documentary, foreign films. We have special events throughout the year, film festival being our biggest one. And big exciting thing is we're going to start construction on a fourth theater probably end of this month. So,
wow.
So we'll have four screens, which will be a huge difference for us. We're excited.
Yeah. Now, during the film festival, are all of the films shown at the Grand, there, or are they located at other houses too?
Yeah, we have a few satellite venues. We've, again, this year, we're going to be showing movies at Tacoma Art Museum, at Tacoma School of the Arts, and First United Methodist Church of Tacoma, which is right behind the Grand Cinema. And then this year, we're adding the Blue Mouse Theater, which we're excited about. It's a second-run theater in Tacoma, and they're actually playing our premiere film on Friday the 2nd. It's North Face. It seems like a very, very dramatic film from its mountaineering topic, so we're excited to include the Blue Mouse this year.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been to Tribeca out in New York, the film festival out there, and I've been to some of the film festivals up here in Seattle, and often found I need to get my tickets ahead of time, otherwise I can't get into the specific movie I see. Is that true of the Tacoma Film Festival?
In some cases, yes. Most of our tickets are sold at the door or the day of. But, you know, some movies, for example, North Face, like I just mentioned, that's going to sell out, so you should get your tickets ahead of time for that. If there's one you really know that you want to see, it's on like a Saturday or Sunday evening or, you know, a prime spot, you probably want to get your tickets ahead of time.
Mm. Have you noticed a particular type of audience who comes to your film festival?
I wish I could pin it down.
Make it easier to select the films, right?
I mean, the Grand Cinema customers are all so different, too. So I think Film Festival maybe is appealing to a little bit younger people, maybe my age or so. But people who support the Grand Cinema tend to support the Tacoma Film Festival also.
Mm. Have you seen any of the movies yourself yet?
I've seen a lot of them, yeah.
Any favorites that you'd recommend? I know you don't want to give favoritism there, but...
Well, I really enjoyed our opening night film. It's called Lovers in a Dangerous Time. The filmmakers will be there at the opening night celebration. That was a really solid feature drama. And
tell us a little bit about it.
They come from Canada, so they're, you know, just in British Columbia, so they're kind of a Northwest connection also. It's a drama about two young adults who come back for a high school reunion and kind of have a rekindled relationship, but it's difficult because so much time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very entertaining, solid film. I think it's often harder to make strong feature films for a film festival rather than shorts. So when we see these great features come along, we want to showcase them.
Mm-hmm. And it's from Canada. Is it French mm-hmm. subtitles? Or
no,
it's
in English.
It's in English. Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of subtitled films then?
We have a handful. We do have some films from Hungary, for example, Ireland, you know, from a few different countries.
Now, how do they hear about the Tacoma Film Festival
in
Hungary?
Well, we work with a website called withoutabox.com, which is just a huge database of film festivals and films and filmmakers. And filmmakers can look on there and see what festivals are coming up, you know, that year and see if it's something they're interested in. So I think that's how they find out about us and give us their film.
So what other films would you recommend based on what you've seen so far?
Mm-hmm. Also on Saturday the 3rd, we're having a premiere film called Spooner, starring Matthew Lillard. And it played at Rainier International Film Festival down by Matt Rainier earlier this year. And I went out there to visit, check out the festival and saw that film there. And luckily they're bringing our film to us, and the writer and director are coming also, so you can get to meet them after the film.
Okay.
So that was a really, really solid comedy once again, really entertaining, laughed out loud.
Yeah, we all need some laughter mm-hmm. in our lives. And then the one you mentioned earlier, I know there's a significant amount of news behind that one, the North Face.
Mm-hmm.
That's a documentary-style film, is it?
Well, it's a reenactment.
A reenactment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can kind of tell that it's trying to just document the whole adventure. So
it was a specific climber,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
have you seen that one?
I haven't, no.
It looks good. I'd put that on my list.
Yes, it looks really solid. It's actually from a distributor, major distributor. So this is the first time we've actually had one that large playing at our festival, so we're excited about that. Mm-hmm. We think that'll be one of the favorites.
Mm. Now, do you get to know much about the filmmakers before they come, before you accept their films?
Yeah, I am actually the liaison for the filmmakers,
right.
And I've been doing all the programming too, so I'm in constant contact with the filmmakers all the time. I know where they live, and I know what kind of
right.
what kind of projects they've done before. If they're coming to Tacoma to visit, you know, I try and do some research about what they've done before and what they can bring to the Tacoma Film Festival.
Mm. So they're not all new filmmakers by any means.
Right.
A lot of very experienced filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Just on
them.
The festival circuit, probably just making films for festivals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I've watched so far was by Sue Gilbert. It's
mm-hmm.
called Beyond Greenaway. And it was have you seen that one?
I did, yes.
I loved that film.
It was very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, she was talking about her family, and the premise behind that, we'll be talking with Sue Gilbert next week, is that it's easier to come out as a gay person, she said, than a wealthy
mm-hmm.
person. She grew up in a family of six kids, in extreme wealth, and she documented a lot of the lifestyle from her parents. You know, it's like an era gone by almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I find it just so interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting how she looks at how her siblings and each of them and her have kind of taken down that path that her parents, laid down for them in very different ways.
Right.
And how
right.
they continue that legacy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're almost at the end of our segment. Thank you so much for being with
Thank
us today,
you,
Emily.
Vicky. It was a pleasure.
Where can listeners find out more about the Tacoma Film Festival?
You can go to www.tacomafilmfestival.com.
That's simple enough.
It's simple.
And I want to thank everyone for being with us today. I hope you can join us next week, because we will be talking to two filmmakers. One of them is premiering at the Tacoma Film Festival. As I mentioned, Sue Gilbert. We'll also be talking with Jen Marlowe, who's an activist, but she decided to use filmmaking to promote her activism. And she went to Sudan, and she's made a great film about the Lost Boys of Sudan, about recovering hope. We'll also be talking with first-time novelist Selden Edwards. Now, we pre-recorded that segment because of scheduling conflicts, but I have to tell you, he was a delight. 68 years old, it took him 30 years to write his novel, and he's just having a blast with it. He's just ecstatic that he's out there and his book's getting good reviews. So that's all coming up next week. And meanwhile, we'll be back. We'll be back next week, as I said. But meanwhile, if you didn't catch, I know I've got brain cramp here. If you didn't catch all of the first segment, it will be up on the website today at conversationslive.net. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. And thanks for being with us on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Join us for a creative hour next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. At the age of 68, first-time novelist Selden Edwards has fulfilled a 30-year dream, and his book is receiving rave reviews. We'll also talk with two documentary filmmakers whose very different films premiere in October at the Tacoma Film Festival. Tune in next Monday at noon Pacific on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Call Vicky at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617 for more information.